Good day. All sites are now on conference line. At this time, I'd like to conduct a brief roll call. Dr. James Beijing. Dr. Jane Barnsteiner.
Present.
Mr. Robert Bunting.
Present.
Dr. David Klassen.
Present.
Dr. Michael Cohen.
Present.
Dr. Charles Denham. Mr. Dan Ford.
Present.
Dr. Bruce Hall.
Present.
Ms. Helen Haskell.
Present.
Mr. John Hickner.
Here.
Mr. David Knowlton. Ms. Nancy LaVille.
Here.
Dr. William Mazel. Dr. David Mayer. Dr. Philip Mueller. Ms. Denise Murphy.
Present.
Dr. Rita Shane. Dr. Arjun Sharma.
Present.
Mr. Sam Watson. And Dr. Robert Wares.
Present.
And that Charles Denham is also present. I had my phone muted.
Yep. Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. This is another meeting of several now for the Patient Safety Advisory Committee. We have had a face-to-face meeting and, I believe, three conference calls. If any further conflicts of interest are new to any of the members, please forward them to Eric for further processing. Denise kindly brought one up for her side. And what I hope to accomplish for today is the ongoing discussion around the patient safety portfolio at National Quality Forum, and to continue with the efforts at focusing this portfolio not only to optimize its current set of activities, but also to begin planning for future activities for both the existing portfolio and to get advice on other potential activities that will benefit the National Quality Forum. The primary focus of today will be on a document that we submitted earlier that outlines some of the focus for a draft document that will continue to move through the committee's activities. The committee so far has kind of undergone an education process of what NQF is all about as it relates to patient safety. We have surveyed the committee in the past to get your opinions on the various components of the patient safety portfolio, and now we're moving into the stage of developing a report which will be utilized as a planning document by NQF for managing its patient safety portfolio moving forward. And so the documents that you've been presented for today's discussion include that outline document. It includes the results of the survey, which we are distributing again for you. And then there are two charts or spreadsheets that are basically, one being a crosswalk to show you how the serious reportable events, the safe practices, and the performance measures cross over to each other or not, as is in several of the cases. And then the final document is another spreadsheet which lists out an inventory of the patient safety measures that we tabulated about 4 or 5 months ago. Represents a little under 20% of the overall measures portfolio for NQF, and we wanted to give those as background as we continue this discussion forward. So let me just pause there for a moment, see if there's any questions or clarifications needed in terms of what we're trying to accomplish continuing to move forward.
Peter, this is Sam. I just want to let you know I joined.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much. Any questions or clarifications needed? I know this has been a bit of a balancing act in terms of providing education and trying to get focus for the group, but I think we're there.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. If then I could ask you to turn to the document that's labeled 1MM PSAC report outline. And Eric, have you got that up on the webinar?
Yep. It's up right now. So
basically, while Eric gets that into place, it's not a true outline in the sense of a detailed document outline, but we brought into play sort of a background purpose, the methodology of the committee, and the three primary sections that we've begun to focus on through the results of our deliberations as well as through the survey work. Does anybody not have that document or unable to see it on the webinar posting? If you don't have it, we'd be happy to email it to you quickly. Okay, hearing none.
Peter, could you send that to Chuck Denham? I'm having the internet browsers crash on me today.
Chuck, I think I actually sent that to you earlier today.
Good, thank you.
Yep, just go through the ones from me, and you should find it. If not, please tell me again. All right, so I'm not going to take you through the line items of this document, but as you can see, the purpose is basically just a bit of a background on what we're trying to accomplish here and the methodology. Similarly, outlines how we're trying to move forward in terms of developing a report of recommendations from the PSAC to NQF. The third section is the goals, and we've got those broken into program harmonization, organizational harmonization, and future charge or next steps. And if we could, I think it would be helpful to have discussion on each of the three segments as we go forward, and we'll do it one by one by one. The first section about program harmonization, when we surveyed you, there was significant focus on recognizing that one of the important things that NQF could and should do is look towards how to better integrate and weave our three core programs together, the serious reportable events, the safe practices, and the patient safety measures. However, we have other programs that we do within this patient safety portfolio as well, and we will be looking for ways to make sure there's some complementarity. But as a minimum, one of the ideas that's come forward is this weaving of those three main programs. And we give you an example in the document of how this might work, and that is as it relates to medication reconciliation or medication management. We clearly have serious reportable events on death and disability associated with medication error. We have a safe practice on medication reconciliation, and there are a fair number of measures that are related to medication management. However, if you have had a chance to look at that crosswalk on all of the serious reportable events to the safe practices and measures, you can see there's a lot of white space or blank spots in that crosswalk. And so, you know, the core question in here is this a reasonable strategy to try and develop this complementarity between the three programs? That would be the first question in the document there. And then, depending on your response to that question, we can decide if we do move forward, what areas would be prioritized in order to get this begun, recognizing that we can't do everything all at once. The field would have nothing short of a major grand mal seizure if that happened. And then, you know, are there other program areas within our portfolio that we should try to drive into this process as well? So let me stop there and see what your guys' reactions are to the concept, and then for us to begin answering those three questions as listed in the document. Mike Cohen, why don't we start with you?
Sure.
Since we use that medication management example, you know, there, and you've been part of this committee for a long period, how would you, or you've been part of NQF's committees for a long period, how would you react to this suggestion?
Well, certainly I think measures can be developed. I think, you know, thinking about this, though, I think we'd have to recognize that, you know, they'd have to be somewhat specific to the drug or drug category that you'd be looking at, not just medication as in general. For example, there are measures that we've developed recently for insulin and medication errors with insulin. In fact, they were just published in the Pennsylvania Patient Safety Reporting Program's advisory this past week or the week before, and we put a tool together for that. So I could see that being done for other drugs or drug categories as well. And so I think that, you know, what you're saying would work. I think it could be accomplished, tying the three together.
Do you see it working outside of other areas, obviously, beyond medications and drug categories? Or
very possibly, yeah. I mean, yes, I could see it working for other serious reportable events. Falls, for example, would be one that, you know, would come to mind.
Yeah, I think some of the clinical conditions and clinically oriented activity is a bit easier to develop this complementarity as opposed perhaps to some of the other more broad-based serious reportable events, but that's open for discussion.
Hi, this is Jane Bernsteiner, and I thought the chart that you did was very illuminating and extremely helpful. I absolutely think that imperatives that we look at trying to fill in the white spaces with what are the safe practices and what would the measures look like, because I think this is certainly adding to some of the frustration of so many healthcare organizations not having this harmonization there. So I really want to commend you putting together this information, and I think it'll be really helpful to us going forward. And I do think it's possible to be able to prioritize which of the reportable events would have priority in terms of what progress we in laying out the timeline for moving forward.
Okay, great, thank you. Before we get into trying to do some prioritizing, and we may need to do that electronically after the call, but other comments for or against this type of a strategy?
I think it's a good strategy overall. This is John Hickner, but I don't think, on the other hand, you want to force a round peg into a square hole. So in some cases, it just is not going to work, and that's fine.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, too. I do see somewhere it would work.
Anything off the top of your head, John, where it would not work?
No, I was trying to look for an example, and one didn't come to mind quickly.
Yeah, I think intuitively you're right, though. There are some that are going to be less amenable to this process.
This is Jim Bajan. I think the idea of trying to fill this, you know, fill the white space in, as you said, Peter, is a good one. I think the other thing that's going to be interesting, and it's kind of what we talked about a while ago, when the prioritization, you know, there's both what the impact, clinical impact is. You want to do things that, you know, can make a huge difference to the outcome of patients, but then also we probably have to think in some way to look at utility, like the effort required to get there or how mature our knowledge is of what the best way to get there is to help, you know, guide that as well, because there might be some things that aren't as frequent or catastrophic in their occurrence, but there are good solutions, and we wouldn't want to ignore those because there's, you know, they might be looked at as low-hanging fruit, that we can at least get some runs on the board and do those, and we shouldn't miss that point either.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Good comment. How about Dan or Helen?
I was thinking, and I don't know how you document this at the current time, but about the role and the responsibility of patients. And I was thinking that particularly as Mike was talking with medication management. How we blend that in, I'm not sure, but we can't forget that piece of it.
Yeah, I would concur with that, and I think this is a good strategy. I like the chart, and I like the fact that it does show up the gaps.
Okay, great. Anyone want to express an opinion against this type of an approach? And if you're uncomfortable doing it,
yeah, this is Bob Weirs. I'm not against it. I'm just worried about maybe three things. One is John's point of it might not work across the board. I can see some utilities. I also can't think of an example, but I worry about the square peg and round hole bit. I worry that it's tied to, if you focus on the serious reportable events, and this might be a scoping issue that I've missed, that ties your work to a small set of events that are all unambiguously bad, but it leaves out lots of things that we would all agree are bad but aren't so clearly unambiguously identifiable, but we still might want to do something about them. The third issue is that I'm worried that it might not scale very easily, that you know, we'll have lots of very specific interventions for lots of very specific events, and it will become difficult. Any one of them might be easy to do, but doing the whole suite of them routinely all the time might become very difficult and burdensome, or they might even conflict with each other. So it's not a reason that we couldn't do it. It's just that I'm a little bit curious about how it's going to play out and what we hope to accomplish by doing it.
Right. Good comments, Bob. And I'll make two.
Peter, this is Denise. I left a strategic planning meeting with all the patient safety officers and the quality directors at my health system today. And one of the things that I know, I'm seeing right at the front line how incredibly overwhelmed people are mm-hmm. with the work. And so I have to really applaud that, you know, the last comments about let's really try to understand what the bang for the buck will be and the impact that it might have on our organizations, because anything coming out of NQF, of course, will be of a lot of interest and a lot of utility for all of us in the state. The state laws will follow, and I just I was trying to formulate my thoughts. Others were doing it much better than I was, but I have to say that I think what I bring to the committee, along with many others, is just that real, you know, front line, day after day, seeing what the impact is having. And I also agree that we just really, I think, have to have a good understanding of the, you know, the cost benefit.
Yep. Well, let me take a moment here to add in a couple of comments regarding some other work that's happening, and to further address, I think, a couple of Bob's points there. One of the other activities is this review and revision to the serious reportable events themselves. And several of you are probably aware that we recently put up for public comment proposed revision to the serious reportable events. And that process is still underway. One of the concepts that came through all of those deliberations is that serious reportable events need to become more broad than just those rare horrific events that don't happen enough that organizations can create significant change in their organizations. And so the so-called cluster of events that should never happen 100% of the time and they are 100% preventable, those will be a subcategory, if you will, of a broader-based grouping of serious reportable events, which are usually preventable, but not necessarily 100% of the time. And that committee has heard the same thing as what this committee has been saying, and that is we need to focus on the types of events that are occurring more frequently that need to be changed, and that we need to help create that change through reporting and improved learning from reporting. So that committee's work is actually in harmony with what you folks have been saying on this committee as well. And we'll keep you apprised of those revisions to the definition. We will be doing a call for new SREs as well as expanding the SRE concept into other environments. And the first three chosen are going to be ambulatory surgery centers or office-based surgery, skilled nursing facilities, and then the third being office-based practice settings. So that works.
Peter,
yep.
It's David Klassen. I actually have some data to back up what you just said.
Okay.
New studies we've done at IHI looking at all adverse events in hospitalized patients, and the serious reportable events are less than 5% of all the adverse events occurring in patients. So it would support what you just observed.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
Peter, on the matrix, it does seem like this plays into this concept of dealing with things that you actually can do something about by mapping it to the safe practices endorsed measures.
Right.
However, looking at the SREs for product and devices, for example, the implications in terms of, for example, CAPA is very different for product misuse versus device malfunction. So you go to safe practices endorsed measures, even though misuse and malfunction are both in the same SRE, the safe practices endorsed measures would be totally different.
Right, and that's a good point. That's where we need not only to just try to fill white space, but we need to make sure that the language within each of these areas becomes meaningful, doesn't create confusion in the field, and is not duplicative or creating conflict.
Yes, certainly, because, I mean, the implications are very different, whether it's the hospital staff or whether it's the manufacturer that's involved.
Right, right. The other point I wanted to address back to Bob is, you know, the existing SREs, the ones that may be added in through this other committee's processes, and the existing practices, existing measures, that's a starting point for the moment to try and build an organizational approach by NQF to weave this complementarity between programs. I don't think over time it's going to be restrictive or constrict the approach across other topic areas, but it's a start point to at least use the programs that we have in existence, make sure they work better together, and then as we expand over time, we need to do it, as Denise challenges us, in a meaningful way that's just not done for the purpose of adding on, but to focus in on topic areas that are meaningful and actionable in the field. So we need to, you know, do all of this approach very in a very mindful way, if you will, sensitive to the field's pressures. And then the last comment I wanted to make before we get more from you guys is that you've heard us mention before this activity we've got with the state-based reporting agencies. The state-based agencies are very much interested in what we are doing with the serious reportable events, as you might imagine, because it's going to impact their world terrifically. But we've also got ARC and CDC and the new Office of Quality engaged in this whole discussion. As you know, the states each had to submit their HAI action plans to the Office of Quality. Those are being reviewed, and there's interest for NQF to continue convening these state-based reporting groups to talk about not only the SREs and the HAIs, but the third element in there is related to the ARC's PSO initiative. And so we're making sure that we get all three of those hot topic areas for the states in synchrony, and again, trying to decrease burden as best possible, but also to improve the impact of reporting and the impact of learning from reporting. So I just wanted to take that little detour to provide more context, but let me try and get us back for you guys to be interacting and further comments on this strategy based on what I've now just said. Chuck, why don't I ask you your opinion? You've got a strong interest and history with the safe practices. How does this work from your perspective on that? hopefully Chuck's not on mute. If he is, that's a prompt.
Peter?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you reframe the question? I had mute on and also charging the battery here. So
no problem, Chuck. I was just I had just been giving my little detour of context and was just trying to get your perspective on this approach of weaving the SREs, the practices, and the measures better together, given your long history with the practices.
Yes, I think it would be extremely valuable in the construct of the SAFE practices. We have a section for measures where we've tried to carefully crosswalk the outcomes, process, structure, and patient-centered measures. However, we have not carefully crosswalked at this point, knowing that the SREs were going to be updated for the 2010 SAFE practices, have not integrated and cross-linked those over, but we really believe that that could be very valuable, and there are quite a few connections. And if the SREs are events that are reportable events that are in fact a measure, the SAFE practices are what you undertake to help prevent those from occurring, and linking the evidentiary base between those two and then also the other measures. We find in our test bed, we have about 3,100 hospitals, would be very valuable, and that's the read we get from those we collaborate with closely.
Thanks, Chuck. Any other comments on this first area of programmatic harmonization? Well, are there some specific SREs or practices that people right off the top of their head want to express, this needs to be priority number one or number two? We won't hold you to it forever, however. Nobody wants to take a jab at that one? All right, what I will suggest is that we follow up with another Survey Monkey. We'll ask for your opinions on how to prioritize the individual serious reportable events, and then we'll offer opportunity in there to make comment about practices or measures as well. But mostly the focus will be on the serious reportable events. And the third question in here on this section was related to, are there other areas of the patient safety portfolio, as you've become able to learn about them, that you think should be focused in on this, driving the complementarity? There's the National Priorities Partnership, there's the common formats, there's a few others. Okay, again, we will follow up with some survey work and give you the opportunity to respond for what you think are the prioritizing for other patient safety portfolio programs, if any. We may find that those other programs don't lend themselves as well to these three core programs that we have in place. All right, any other comments on this programmatic harmonization? If not, we'll move forward. But any others have any further thoughts?
Well, some of them, like the drug ones and the surgery ones, you can actually fill in the blanks. I mean, or at least I can, just thinking of the places I've worked in the past. So I think that some of the blanks, I think the issue is really, is there something that's accepted and that's standardized, or are these just being used ad hoc, around the country?
Good point.
So I think that people are actually filling in those blanks themselves in the individual institutions.
That's my sense of it. Any others want to make comment, Arjun's comment?
Yeah, Mike, this is Jane Barnes-Hunter, and I do think that folks are individually coming up with measures, or in some instances there might be some professional organization standards around them. But I think what would be helpful is for us to be able to harmonize that and be able to fill in these blanks. So I do think in a lot of instances that's what organizations are spending a lot of time on, is coming up with safe practices or coming up with measures.
Right.
This is Denise. I would totally agree with that. Both at the parent health system and our own health system and in our organizations, we spend so much time vetting, coming up with the measures, understanding if there's no national benchmark and we have to make this up, what's a reasonable percent reduction. And this is the kind of stuff that would be incredibly valuable.
Right. Well, there's the, you know, the National Guidelines Clearinghouse and that whole set of activities. Do you folks have an opinion that that guideline clearinghouse is being utilized in the same regard, or is there more of a reliance on professional organizations and their measures or practices?
Again, it's Jane. I think folks in the practice settings go to any of the resources that they're able to identify. The issue is the amount of time that's spent and the lack of agreement about what are safe practices, what are some of the endorsed measures, and it would be great to be able to get agreement on what organizations might be able to do instead of everybody inventing the wheel.
Right. Good comments, both of you. Thank you. Any other comments as we close this section? Well, those comments actually lend us a little bit to the next section, which is all about organizational harmonization. And in the survey work we did with you earlier, we listed a variety of other organized healthcare organizations to which we know have patient safety activities. It was obviously not an exhaustive list. We clearly did not include some organizations that excuse me, are more specifically focused on individual disciplines or professional organizations. But there was pretty clear agreement that NQF should perhaps work more closely with the Joint Commission, with ARC, and with CMS. And as we say in the document there, that really sort of drives us towards that four-pronged approach of accreditation, payment, research, and measurement with public reporting. Within ARC, we tend to now think of public reporting as well because of the PSO initiative. But is there still sort of a general agreement that those are the three other organizations that are on top of list?
Yes, I would agree.
Jim Bajan, I agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is Sam, yes.
That as well. Jane, yes.
Okay. Now, are there others that, you know, we had obviously IHI and a couple of others. The survey results are in your package there. And there certainly is potential benefit with partnering with some of the other organizations as well. But would these three, Joint Commission, ARC, and CMS, from your opinions, be the main three? Anybody want to add one into that group or another one?
This is Mike. I would have to say in the drug area, we actually do have a number of guidelines that are publicly available on our website. For example, this week we're publishing guidelines on development of order sets, both electronic and printed. And we have guidelines on automated dispensing cabinet use and so on and so forth. But it is very focused in the area of medication use. However, the hospitals nationwide do use these guidelines, so might be the way to go.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think ISMP, does a whole bunch of stuff that, you certainly want to be in contact, to be self-serving in a way or whatever. Certainly, the VA National Center for Patient Safety gets involved in a lot of things, and many times we're the early ones in figuring out certain things just because we have the access to a large number of institutions, of our own institutions to trial things and see if they work. So probably, everything going back to Universal Protocol kind of came out of the VA. I don't know if that's good or bad. But the, there's probably things like that. I don't need a formal relationship, but it's certainly active, and there's a lot of things that are posted up on the web and are used not just in the United States but worldwide. So that might be one that, is set up to do things like that.
Good comment, Jim. Thank you. So it sounds like we've got pretty much general agreement on Joint Commission, ARC, and CMS with NQF, and then to consider it working early and closely with ISMP, the VA, IHI, as some others within that process.
Yeah, definitely IHI. They have a number of
yes.
rules, guidelines, and measurements, et cetera.
Correct, yeah. So, one of the comments, it might have been from Denise or Jane at one of our meetings or in the email exchanges, was since there is such a focus on HAI, whether we should be doing more over and above already what we are with HAI. We've got the initiative I just mentioned a few minutes ago with the state-based reporting. We've got some HAI measures that are going to be reviewed and updated as part of our measures project. And then the ongoing discussions with the Office of Quality, which is now looking after the HAI action plan. And then I know Dave was mentioning to me a little bit ago about the compendium group getting together and beginning a review process there. Opinions about our focus on HAI at this time. Dave or Denise?
Well, Peter, the data I was referring to about a new study of adverse event in hospitals, the top three categories that account for most of the adverse events are medication-related, surgery-related, or procedure-related, and HAIs.
Mm-hmm.
So I would agree with the focus on them based on the epidemiology of harm currently in hospitals.
Okay. That helps. Thank you. And maybe those types of subsets, HAI and medications, to some degree procedural-based stuff, can be part of our prioritizing activity for that first segment that we talked about, as well as looking for focus areas to begin some work with these other organizations like Joint Commission, ARC, and CMS. So we're already beginning to build a matrix into place, if you will. Well, in the document there, we've got three questions under organizational harmonization. And the first one is really, which of the NQF patient safety programs do you think would be most effective to approach these other organizations with in terms of trying to harmonize? Do folks have opinions about that? Could be part of our big three, or it could be some of the other programs. You know, at some level, for just my own thoughts, it's easy to approach the Joint Commission in terms of serious reportable events and their Sentinel Events Program. Reasonably easy to approach the Joint Commission with the safe practices and the National Patient Safety Goals. There's already some harmonization that goes on between those organizations on the goals and practices. But those are two examples. Are there other examples that folks would like to see us move towards? I think conceptually it's a little bit hard, perhaps, but
ARC might be interested in some of the measures, effectiveness.
Yeah, that's sort of one of the areas that I was thinking about. And ARC is submitting a couple of measures to our measures project, as is CDC. What about the patient safety indicators or the culture tools that ARC has? Folks have any opinions how those two might work with some of the NQF projects?
This is Sam. We spend a fair amount of time measuring culture, and I think certainly the HSOPS tool, it needs to be explored a little bit in terms of outcomes linkages, but I think it certainly bears consideration.
Okay.
Peter, this is Denise. We've just recently been through the AHRQ survey system-wide, and we got strong feedback from our medical staff who was very engaged, and, you know, hundreds of them took the survey, and almost uniformly they said, this is not a good survey for physicians. It is very very much more, you know, clinically staff oriented than for clinicians. And I don't know that I totally agree with that, but if I just thought I'd put it out there for your comments, because we have such a cast of experience on the call, that I was wondering if any of you had any experience with your physician's response to the AHRQ survey.
Anybody want to make comment about that? Or Jim, your own work with survey culture surveys in the VA system and physicians?
Yeah, I guess our experience, the ARC survey has many, you know, it was taken, started with ours, and they changed some of it. We haven't seen that same response from our physicians about the survey, but there are some differences between the ARCs and ours. So, I mean, I think I would agree that there is more weighting, I shouldn't say weighting, but there's more of the questions have higher utility towards staff than the physicians, but there are a number for the physicians, at least in ours, that I think are useful, but it's probably worth looking at. And I think there are some things in the ARC they might be willing to think about changing or getting rid of, because there's some things that went past the solely cultural aspects just for other information they wanted to get that they may not feel has utility any longer, and making it shorter doesn't hurt.
This is Sam also. Just from our experience, I've not heard that sort of feedback either with regard to physicians. The other thing, and I'm not just in terms of how we've applied it, we have a requirement that that's at least a physician 20% time spent on a given unit, because we always do the surveys from a unit level, and it may be more relevant, you know, at that point, which the physician has more interaction with the team in a specific unit versus just kind of a general safety survey.
Right, and I think one of the issues too is probably when you have a large staff of community practice physicians, that's where I think you get a lot of pushback too, because they're just not spending as much time on the up on the units to really see what's going on in the patient safety area. That could be a large piece of it.
Okay. Dan or Helen, any comments about this cultural survey stuff and its importance for NQF to participate or cross-link?
This is Dan. I'm not sure I have enough of a feel to be able to comment, Peter.
That's fine. No problem.
Yeah, I think I have to pretty much beg off in the same way.
Okay. Not a problem. The only reason I asked was that you know, the culture of safety is an important issue within the patient advocacy community, and I thought you may have some opinions, but that's perfectly fine. Thank you for your honesty. It doesn't sound like the PSI or the patient safety indicators strikes a chord with too many folks in terms of working towards some activity with that in NQF, or am I wrong there?
Yeah, this is Jim Bage, and I'll jump on that one. You know, we've been involved for years with ARC to one extent or another with some of these PSIs, the issue being the reliability and accuracy of the PSIs having to do with their definitions and the, you know, the denominators that are used. So I think there's still a lot of work being done. I mean, we're in the VA spending a lot of research area really trying to validate some of these measures, but a lot of them aren't very good. So, I mean, I think at this point, with the degree of uncertainty surrounding many of the PSIs, or certainty that they stink in the case of some others, that I don't think I would recommend NQF dip the oar in the water too much on this one until that gets sorted out, because I think it's just really problematic.
Thank you for your honesty, Jim. Anybody want to take an opposing view or a different view from Jim's?
Peter, it's David Klassen. In the work we've done at IHI, we found the ARC PSIs to miss about 93% of the events,
right,
and to have specificity problems as well.
Yep.
So Jim is right on about that comment.
Yeah, my own personal sense as well, but thank you guys for ratifying that. Well, again, I think what we'll move towards is some survey work with you, with the Survey Monkey, to answer these questions in terms of which elements of the patient safety portfolio would be best for these organizational strategies, as well as soliciting your opinions electronically as to, within those three and perhaps a couple of other added organizations like IHI, SMP, and the VA, which programmed in those systems would we work at trying to drive further harmonization, see if we can build a nice matrix or crosswalk there as well. So we'll follow up with some survey work on that. Let me ask that third question just as a general sort of strategy. You know, we have agreement that we need to work together. Each of these organizations are complex in and of themselves. They have their own obvious agendas for moving forward. NQF is getting better and continues with a focus for convening as well as to collaborate. Do you think a sort of a combined collective strategy would work, or would we be better off taking more of a targeted one-by-one approach? This is kind of a philosophical question because we haven't got exactly the targets organized yet, but in general, what's your sense of the receptivity for doing a combined meeting?
This is Jim Bajan. I think, you know, certainly to get these groups together is a good thing. I think it might be easier to start out with because there's such a myriad of things we could look at to try to pick one that where there tends to be more agreement that, one, there's a problem, that, two, there are certain interventions that people would agree are the way to go, and use that as a learning opportunity for these groups to work together in a collaborative way to drive that home, and then the others follow naturally rather than to dilute it, looking at a number of different initiatives which each, you know, have their own complexity and really making it difficult to get anywhere. I mean, that's just my thought. I would try to pick one focus, deal with that, and then move out from there, use that as a learning opportunity.
Other opinions? Yeah, it's kind of a philosophical question. Well, I think we do have opportunity to move in that regard, Jim and others. It's actually related to the National Priorities Partnership. The NPP has its six focus areas, one being patient safety. Within that, the work that we're putting together for that initiative is to focus in on perioperative safety as a beginning platform. And the focus for that will be how to prevent HAI and obviously specifically surgical site infection. Second is how to prevent serious reportable events in the perioperative environment, and that's not just cutting off the wrong limbs, but it's pressure ulcers, et cetera. And then the third component in there is how to augment or improve cross-disciplinary team function, because that obviously is pivotal in terms of trying to get things done. There will be a convening of a meeting probably in June of several organizations to focus in on this, and the purpose of the meeting will be to develop up actionable items, not just another dissection of the issues that create the problems, but we'll work with a presumption that people and organizations recognize there's problems on those areas, and how do we get the fixes beginning to occur. In my mind, the Universal Protocol from the Joint Commission is a wonderful example of something that's not necessarily working. It's been out there, you know, almost 6 years now. The VA has had some success, but there are still several organizations and states struggling with how to bring down the frequency and incidence of wrong site surgeries. So just throwing a protocol out there doesn't necessarily create the change that we want. So that NPP initiative might be something that we'll get the results of that and then perhaps move it towards these other organizations as listed. Does that make some sense with folks?
Sounds good to me.
Other comments? Sam, you've been involved with broad-based initiatives. Does that work for you in terms of an idea?
It does, and I think that's a really good area to start with. There's a lot of momentum already with the WHO checklist, and really interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, Bruce Hall, you're hopefully, if you're still on the line, you've been involved with NISQIP and all of its cross-cutting approaches. Does that type of a strategy seem to make some sense for you from your perspectives?
Yeah, it does, Peter. I've been quiet, but that's only because I've been shaking my head vigorously up and down to all of the recent comments. So, yeah, I think it does.
Okay, thank you. Others with any other comments? Bob Weir. I'm going to seek you out in a few moments on the next part here. So I'm trying to make sure everybody gets their opportunities. All right, so I think we have some focus on that second area. We're about an hour into this, so we'll keep the time clock moving. These have been helpful comments. Thank you so much. So the third area, you know, we've kind of gone, okay, what should NQF do internally to make itself more robust? What can NQF do externally to harmonize and help simplify that workload that the field is feeling? And then the third is, over and above what we've already talked about, what more can we do in terms of anticipating future change and trying to help move the field along in a positive direction with the platform that NQF represents? John just superbly categorized NQF's programs on the last call into those three categories that are listed in the document, and you could just sort of feel the buzz of energy on the call when John knocked off those three comment areas. And I think they do resonate quite well. The third area, which is, you know, what steps are necessary in order to improve safety, with the only one being the safe practices in that category, you know, that might be an area that NQF, it's not its core function, but we're certainly in that territory because of the safe practices and because of a lot of the hard work that some of you on the call have done. But let me just ask this simple question. Is this three clusterings still resonate for you? John, your comment, you brought that up. Does it still make sense to you?
Yeah, it certainly does. And I guess a big question is to what extent NQF should be involved in step three. So far, NQF sort of shines the flashlight on the areas that need work, which is a real service. And number three is a big area.
Right. Are there other comments on this little clustering that John brought to our minds? Does it not work for anyone? Okay. One of the, as I mentioned, one of the things that NQF does well is convening, be a neutral convener. We've got a few examples of that. And a couple of areas that have come up for discussion. I was just talking with Rosemary Gibson at the spring conference last week about it again, and that is whether or not NQF should try to convene a little bit more in terms of its future activities. And a couple of focus areas would be those top three bullets that related to patients and patient advocacy, that related to implementing technology to improve safety, and then some type of a role in trying to further augment patient safety in the educational programs with convening amongst the provider organizations. And each of these may be important, but they may or may not be in the realm of NQF's core activity, but I'd like your reactions to those. I must be wearing the group out.
Peter, there is one thing I don't know. I'm not certain that it's within the realm of NQF's, you know, activities or not, but certainly the concern that we continue to have, I guess all of us, about the, you know, the Chuck's area of care of the caregiver, and but more how the boards react to, you know, people's involvement in the medical RNL, obviously also the criminalization of the medical RN. You talk about convening. I think there's such a need for convening, you know, not just healthcare organizations, but legal organizations as well, you know, to discuss this whole area. I think it does have the potential for having a severe impact on safety in the long run. I know that, you know, pretty much it seems like it's been an aberration to have somebody criminal charges brought against them, but we have seen that again recently. We just had a pharmacist, as you know, that served a jail term. Strictly for an hour. And it's of concern to a lot of the practitioners out there, I can tell you that. So I don't know if that's something you would want to even get into, but there certainly is a need for something like that.
Good point, Mike. Thank you. And for each of these potential convening areas that I've mentioned and the one Mike just did, it's the type of thing that we would need to have some funding support for from whatever types of strategies we could come up with. But convening is an area that we're more and more interested in trying to facilitate. So those are good areas. But other comments? I thought someone else was going to make a comment.
Peter, this is Dan. It'd be disingenuous if I didn't comment on the patient and family piece, the advocacy. Whether that is something that NQF should convene on its own, or whether in all of the areas we're talking about we have patient advocates involved, like Helen and I are involved right now, I don't have a handle on that. I know there's a lot of stuff going on in terms of patient and family care activity, and it's something we need to grow and really be cognizant of all the time. But how that gets done, I don't know. I'd be interested in the comments of others. I also share the comments of Mike just in terms of the care of the caregiver. I feel very strongly about that. And then you talk in the third bullet, professional-provider organizations, including the role of education. I don't know if this includes professional medical education programs like medical school and pharmacy and nursing and healthcare administration, et cetera, but are we comfortable with where all of these curriculums are in terms of patient safety? Do we know what's out there? And what kind of sort of a role could or should NQF play?
Yeah, it's a good point, Mike. And as many of us know, there's only a few initiatives that have been happening. AAMC and the Board of Medical Specialties have been starting up their own initiatives as well. And it may be just way too far afield for NQF to get into that area other than to stay connected and to offer platforms for some of the different strategies that need to be endorsed. Convening around disciplines and professional organizations for sort of a continuing education strategy might be another approach in all of this. But, you know, we just throw these out for discussion and reaction from the committee. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be able to mobilize funds and get them active or whether it's in our purview.
What about Dan's point about collaborating with patient advocacy organizations or whether it would be NQF on its own sort of calling people to come in?
Yeah, no, I think, let me put it this way, with certainly NQF as an organization, and I know Janet as a CEO and myself as an individual view interactions with the patient and patient advocacy community as a high priority. Within NPP, there's obviously prioritizing towards patients and families as well, and we don't want to get out of step with what's going on with the NPP. But my sense is that while there is a fair amount of patient and patient advocacy work going on, it's still kind of happening within different organizations, but not necessarily in sort of a kind of a harmonized way in its own. And so perhaps doing a little bit of convening to bring the groups together might help. But I may be not entirely up to speed with what's going on in the patient advocacy arena just right now.
Well, there's a lot going on, and it's not, you know, not entirely connected and coherent, so I don't really know how to address that.
Well, and that's the point. It would be to try and identify the appropriate groups and to help to drive a little bit more connectedness, if you will. You can't have uniformity in everything, but
yeah. We
can have some harmony and some cross-fertilization.
I think at the minimum, being aware of what's going on out there,
as
well as emphasizing a baseline of the philosophy of partnership.
Right.
Yeah, this is Jane.
Hey, Peter.
So many of the advocacy groups are grassroots, very local level.
Right.
And so I think many of them might welcome an opportunity to, you know, sort of have an overarching umbrella approach.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, Chuck here. We were very careful to have a new a chapter that was new in 2009 that we continued in 2010 for involving patients and families. It was very well received with the 09, and there is a section in each of the safe practices that ties in what how to involve and engage patients and families. If at some future date, if funding was available to convene advocacy groups to provide an input or to inform the safe practices narrative development in years to come, it would be great, because we built those sections in that chapter with a number of the advocates that are on this call and input from those. But if in some future date, and I know resources are scarce, but a one-day or two-day meeting of all of the advocacy groups to provide input to inform the updates of the practices, and especially in the section, Peter, that you and I, are always, interested in, is the new horizons. We could perhaps catalyze or stimulate some connectedness there that has been addressed. So just throw that in. Peter, you always love it when somebody comes up with an idea for more money to be spent, but convening that to inform the practices would be great.
Thanks, Chuck. Good comments. And Helen and Dan, thank you. Other comments on some of this convening activity, perhaps even separate from the ones we have mentioned?
Peter, this is Nancy Lavelle. The cross-cutting measures, I think, could be a potential,
mm-hmm.
because still a lot of these measures are all in, they're silos of areas of care, hospitals or community or nursing homes, and the ones that cross over, I think, there'd be better potential to improving some of that care.
Good idea, good thoughts. Thanks, Nancy.
Peter, the section on device safety is a little complex because obviously most of that gets reported directly to the FDA.
Yeah.
And they currently have a pretty strict oversight over that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the bullet there of implementing technology to improve safety, that's a difficult proposition, actually, in part because if you implement something, a change that is implemented because of a safety issue in the field, that immediately is a recall.
Right.
That's what the current FDA position is, which almost makes it impossible to do product improvement for safety reasons right now. You have to come up with a new product instead.
Okay.
It's bizarre, but true. So I'm not sure what opportunities there are in that particular field. But I agree with the previous comments about if there was a checkbox, for example, on the discharge from hospitals that you had actually booked a patient appointment for follow-up, that would be one simple measure. Another would be family education.
Right.
That would be something that could be just very much a tick-the-box type of thing to ensure that it was actually occurring.
Right. Thanks, Arjun. I appreciate your comments about the FDA and those complexities.
Hey, this is Bob Weirs. I have a less rosy view of the FDA and devices. I think tons of device problems I don't think get reported. I think many device problems users aren't even aware of. We've done usability studies that show people making errors on monitored defibrillators and going their merry way, not noticing that they've made the problem is there at all. And in most of these, the device has already been FDA approved and is marketed. So I think there's significant area for improvement there. I think the same thing would hold of information technology that's being rapidly introduced everywhere in order to get stimulus money.
I agree with that, and that was why I was making the distinction between malfunction and misuse. In other words, it's almost any device it's quite possible to harm a patient with any device if used inappropriately.
Well, but I think inappropriately sort of I would not put use errors where a user has an appropriate intention but hits the wrong buttons. Just to use a simple example, that's technically an inappropriate use, but I wouldn't classify it that way. It's because it's not intentional. There are device design issues that would make that more or less likely to occur, and I think bringing those to the fore, I think would be a service.
I think that's quite right. That's why if there was a mechanism, and I'm not sure quite how, but if there was a mechanism to receive misuse type of events, then certainly one could tabulate them and see if there are particular devices that tend to have excess misuse. And if that's the case, then it would suggest exactly what you're saying, that there's an ergonomic type of safety risk posed by that particular device.
I don't think you need to tabulate very many. If an experienced user, otherwise well-trained and well-intentioned doing their ordinary work, misuses a device, then that's an indication that there's a design problem in the device.
Yeah, this is Jim Bajan. I would agree with that. I mean, we look at these things a lot. I think the question I would have at this juncture is the FDA, even though they have things that are, you know, considered human factors in the approval and the 510K process, I can tell you for a fact they've admitted they don't do it. Now, there's new management at CDRA just with Jeff Shuren taking over, and things might change, but until that gets squared away, I'm not sure how much impact you can have at this point, because we've been railing about this for years, and we're just starting to make some headway. I think once they get their feet on the ground over the next year, it might be appropriate. Before that, I don't think you'll be telling them much they don't know, but they're unable to respond in any kind of meaningful way. So, I mean, it's just something. I think timing might not be right at this moment to try to attack that one in a useful way.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for those comments. It sounds, though, by the generation of the discussion, that there's probably some kind of convening activity or work that NQF might be able to promote in there, but it's going to need some more thought and consideration as to what that might actually be. Bob, while we got you going, though, with your background interests in human factors and system reengineering, are there, as you understand NQF and its platform and where we're trying to go, are there other types of future activities that might be of some value from your perspectives?
Well, I think you could you could build on sort of this safety practices idea to include, you know, some of the ergonomic issues, for example. So, you know, it might be a good safety practice to have vendors supply the results of usability evaluations, or to have organizations engage in their own usability evaluations before making purchases. I mean, so that's a safety practice that we could put in place that wouldn't depend on the FDA. Now, I realize that there's chicken and egg issues here. You can't get organizations to do usability evaluations because they don't have usability engineers, and they don't have them because they don't do the evaluations, et cetera. But I think putting that out there raises consciousness, you know, brings attention to the field, can start to move things forward in that direction, and I think that would be a good service.
Good point. Thanks. I appreciate that. Well, I am mindful of the time, as always, so I appreciate all of these comments for this section as well. We've covered all three sections. We will follow up with some minutes, and we'll follow up with some SurveyMonkey tools to tease out a few more of your ideas. And then what that will help us do is to generate a bit more of a robust draft document, which you know, we as NQF staff will begin to write, and then we'll begin circulating that around for your inputs, ideas for expansion or deletion and general editing. And we'll move that over the course of the next couple of months with the idea that we can come up with a document that summarizes our work to date and then puts into place an action plan with ideas along these three patterns that we've been discussing. The survey work and both previously and the new will help us in finalizing some of those ideas. So please keep your thinking caps on, and you have lots more opportunity to input your ideas, your innovations, and your strategies as we go forward in all of this. So thank you all for those comments. What I want to do, we have two things left to do before we close off, and one is just a quick update on some of the other patient safety projects, and then we need to solicit some comments from anyone in the public who or NQF members who may want to have further comments based on today's discussion so far. In terms of other patient safety activities, we made mention of the serious reportable events work and clarifying the definition and then expanding the SREs, a call for expansion and comments on the existing SREs will go out in the next few weeks to a month, and so please look for that. We are in the final steps of the edits for the updated Safe Practices Manual. The Safe Practices were updated with some minor revisions that went through the Consensus Standards Approval Committee and our board. And so those are in place. The manual is in its final stages. A new development that has come up in the last week or so is some concern around Safe Practice 22, which is related to surgical site infections, and a new bullet that was added in on the specifications regarding chlorhexidine skin preparation. Whenever there is a question about some of our work or the evidence surrounding our work, we have this mechanism in place called an ad hoc maintenance review, and so we're putting this query under ad hoc maintenance review, and we'll have that finalized and resolved in the near future. But otherwise, the patient safety, the safe practices, are moving ahead quite well. The patient safety measures project, there's been a call for measures. We've had about 50 measures come in, and our steering committee is getting finalized for that, so we'll be getting that full project underway. There's a fair amount of HAI-related measures in there, as well as a fair number of perinatal measures, and then there's a number of others from a variety of different backgrounds that we'll be processing. The patient safety, the reporting framework, this is a framework report on measuring, evaluating, and publicly reporting serious reportable events. That document has gone through committee review twice, and it's just about to be released for public comment. It's a wonderful document that's got all sorts of information about reporting, and I would encourage you, as that comes up for public comment, to have a look at that document and provide inputs for us so that we can continue to make that a robust document. The state-based reporting initiative I made mention of, the National Priorities Partnership I made mention of, and the common formats, which is the ARC contract to help with the Patient Safety Organization initiative. That work is ongoing. Version 1.1 is up. The technical specifications for moving it to an electronic platform is underway, and there will be expansion of the common format strategy into the skilled nursing facility arena as well. And so there's a fair amount of complementarity with what we're up to there overall. So that's kind of our quick update, and be happy to answer any questions or provide clarifications based on that quick note.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause for a moment. We'll take our first question from Rita Gallagher. Please go ahead.
Peter, is it appropriate for member comment now?
Yes, please, Rita. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to speak from two separate perspectives. First of all, following on to your comments about the National Priorities Partnership, I have the privilege of serving as a co-chair of the Care Coordination Work Group, and I'd like to remind the group that there is, I believe, an opportunity for synergy with the work of the advisory committee well beyond the priority that is absolutely directed at patient safety. We heard today about the need for patient engagement as well as the opportunities for safety for the safety aspects of care coordination. So please know that I'm sure that all of the work groups would be interested in working with you all in moving the MPP agenda forward.
Great. Secondly, thanks, Rita. That's a wonderful comment. Thank you for making that.
You're quite welcome. And secondly, I'd like to speak from my role as Vice Chair of the National Coordinating Council for Medication Error Reporting and Prevention. The council is working as we speak, gathering comments on a set of recommendations or a statement around the issue of opposition to criminalization of medical errors, and we would be very pleased to share that with you when we finalize that document, which is likely to occur in June.
Well, we'd be more than happy and would welcome being able to have a look at that document. So.
Actually, there are a number of member organizations that are NQF members, as well as organizations that are on this call that are involved in the council. So there will be plenty of opportunity for input, and we will share it.
Great. Thank you. Any reactions or Rita's comments from any of the committee members? Okay. Hearing none, thank you. Operator, are there any other questions or comments?
It appears we have no further questions at this time.
Okay, so with that, we'll close the public comment period. And any final comments or suggestions from the committee members on the direction we're headed or the work that we're doing? Are the survey monkeys helpful for you all?
Yes.
They work fine, yes.
It works.
Yeah, that it seems to be helpful for us as well. I'm very, very appreciative of the number of you that have joined this call today. To me, it shows your ongoing interest and commitment to trying to help us make this all better. To have 14 or 15 folks on the call after we've been at it for 6 or 8 months is a testament in and of itself. So thank you for that, and hopefully we'll continue to be able to keep you interested, keep you engaged, and get you helping us out as we move this report into its production phase. At any time, if there's comments that you want to make electronically or you want to speak verbally, don't hesitate to contact us. Eric is doing just a superb job of helping to manage us on all of this, and we'll keep working him hard as we can. So with those as some general thank you and closing comments, we'll draw the meeting to a close unless there's other comments people have. Hearing none, we'll call it.
Have a good evening, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody.